So when the war came,
he was on the Cross Channel ferry, and on a trip to Ireland, the ship was bombed and sunk, and our friends, you know, on the bridge were killed instantly, of course, and my father went down through the hatches and got his men out of the engine room, and of course was decorated for bravery and went up to Buckingham Palace and all the rest, you know. But he was missing for a bit, and then he was rescued by Trumbull lifeboat, you know. And in fact, Trumbull Head Lighthouse has got a sort of thing on it, you know, remembering this famous occasion when so many people were killed on the Cross Channel ferry.
So were they torpedoed or something?
No, bombed. Just plain bombed.
Gosh. Mm-hmm. And you must remember that very clearly then. Were you at home then?
Well, I spent 4 years in the Air Force, so I was otherwise in Gowsing doing it. Well, actually, I think... Where was I? I think I went to Eastbourne to do the... to help with the weather. I was a meteorologist for the Dieppe raid. So it must have been about that time, was it, Dieppe raid? I can't remember, but... And, of course, we had all the Canadians there, and they all went over. We were bombed heavily on these hotels on the seafront. And the poor Canadians went over on the raid, and the whole lot were killed or captured, you know. It was awful. Mm. And then I went down to Penrith Dock. My mother was on her own because my brother had gone to the Fleet Air Arm. And my father, of course, that ship had gone, so he went on hospital ships then. And he was in every single landing in the Mediterranean. And then he came back to Mulberry Harbour, you know, in time for the invasion. So... Oh, my mother, oh, he's gone again, you know.
It was,
you know. But yeah, he's at Anzio and all the landings in the Mediterranean. Next room to us in Ops, it was at Pembroke Dock, because I was on anti-submarine warfare on the Sunderlands, flying out from Milford Haven. And the next room was the photography department. And I went in there one day, and there I saw the hospital ship coming up through the Mediterranean in the sunshine. Oh, gosh, it was wonderful, because I couldn't tell my mother. I never told my mother about it, you see. And she was there, oh dear, dear, dear.
You couldn't tell her?
No.
But you knew that he was okay then?
And coming back.
So was he working as an engineer then on the hospital ship?
Yes, on the hospital ship.
So he was by this time sort of nearly 50, was he? Late 40s?
Yes.
Around that, yeah. And I wonder what it must have been like for him to go back to the Mediterranean.
Well,
his home.
Well, his languages came in handy, didn't they? And he'd been at sea and on ships always. He spoke several languages.
Did he? Did he ever speak Spanish at home?
No, we weren't allowed to learn Spanish. No.
Well, interesting how your mother was so anti that whole... It's like cutting a whole bit of your... Half your culture off, gone, not allowed to explore it.
Yes, and then, of course, the people from Gibraltar were evacuated. Well, Felix's mother took her three children to Madeira, and they were fine there in Madeira. But my grandmother was there, didn't want to leave. And that's how she got left to about the last, because She just took her heels in. She didn't see why she had to go. And in fact, she would have been much better off staying there, but that was something else. So she came, and Maria, that was her daughter-in-law, Albert's, Uncle Albert's wife, another brother's wife, and Francis and Albert, those children, they came over then with my grandmother to look after her, really, because she was in her 70s by then. And they were put into a hotel in Oxford Street. And, of course, everything was... I don't think it was a high-explosive bomb. It was incendiaries got the hotel, you know, and burnt it down. But my grandmother was out in the street and she realised she hadn't got her glasses and she insisted on going back into that building to get them out. But, of course, they lost most of the stuff they brought from Jib. So they were put into a block of flats in Prince Albert Road. You know, it's one of those now very desirable, expensive blocks, you know, just above Primrose Hill there. But it was, of course, there was nothing in there. It was a bare, absolutely bare. And they were given, you know, army sort of truckle beds and wooden chairs. It was no degree of comfort whatsoever. It was bare floors. It was fairly, you know. Anyway, that's what it was like. And Frances was quite young then. She's younger than I am. So she must have been about 16, I suppose. And of course they wouldn't let her go out or anything, but fortunately for me, I was married young. That's another extraordinary story, but anyway, I was married. I was 20.
You can give us a little glimpse of that. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, when the war broke out, I was in the Bank of England, because my mother didn't want me to go to art school. My mother didn't want me to do anything, really. My father thought it was shocking that women did anything except be home with mother, you know. And we were evacuated down to Hampshire, and which is where Portals paper mills were, where the bank paper was made for the banknotes. And, of course, it was bombed. And this must have been about 1941, I can't remember now, it's so long ago. And the sappers came from to defuse the bombs which had dropped on the paper mills, and that's how I met my husband. He came to, he was a defuser of bombs. Oh dear.
And so you were very young then. Did you say you were about 17?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Gosh.
Well, he was pretty young.
He would have been, yes.
He was pretty young, too.
Yeah.
I think he was 21 or 22 when we were married.
So did you have any idea that your Gibraltarian relatives were in London?
Yes, of course I went to see them. And I think... I think that the authorities thought that my mother would have had them down in Pembrokeshire myself. But of course she wouldn't dream of that. And as it happened, I don't know how she would have managed if they had gone, because she was firmly not going to speak anything but English, or Welsh at a pinch, I suppose. But she certainly wasn't going to speak Spanish. And my grandmother was equally determined never to even learn one single word of Spanish.
English.
English.
English. Your grandmother. English. Yeah. Yes. Grandma. That's so funny. So they. I mean, honestly, it's like some drama, isn't it?
Yes.
But was this the first time you
I'd met
them?
Yes.
So what was that like? It must have been so interesting for you.
Well, they were then in this block of flats, you know, and of course they didn't think much of it. I mean, they'd have been better off at home, wouldn't they, really? And they came over on a boat which had picked up a lot of people in Malta, because, of course, they'd had a terrible time in Malta, hadn't they? And I suppose, really, they thought that Gibraltar might suffer the same fate. And nobody quite knew what way Spain was going, really. And look what happened at Guernica. Anything could happen, couldn't it, really? So, anyway, my mother went. I went with her. I can't remember the exact how it was up, but I know Frances had to do the translating, really, because she was about 16 then, and I remember my grandmother very disapproving of me, of course, but, you know, it was nice to meet her, and she was sitting there dressed in black with gold earrings, you know, like as you expect a decent lady from Gibraltar. And I was shocked to the core because I hadn't got my ears pierced. So I had them done straight away pretty well after that. Like now I can't even put my earrings in. What about
Frances? Did you become friendly with her, cousin?
Yes. I was very friendly with Frances. Yes. Her husband was in Gibraltar. So the men stayed, so yes. The women came. Oh, yes, I've always been very friendly with Frances.
So you were able to sort of say, you know, how ridiculous the older generation were being?
Well, because I was married, she could come out with me as a chaperone.
Of course, yeah.
Which was really killingly funny, really, but we used to go to all sorts of jolly places, like Lion's Corner Shop, you know. Very wicked.
And what did the grandmother think of that?
Well, I don't think we ever asked her, really. But when she was 18, of course, poor old Frances had to go and work in munitions. And there was no question of chaperones then. So that was not... I think that must have been a bit of a shock.
In England, this was?
In London.
Yes. So that's really interesting, actually, because I've asked a couple of people if the Gibraltarians were made to work when they came to England, and they were, as far as
Yes. Well, you had to get ration books and things, didn't you? And the rations, of course. Oh, dear. You can imagine their ideas of the food over here and the ration books and everything. It was awful. And I always remember one... my grandmother was absolutely furious because they were not, they said they weren't well, they couldn't manage with no fruit, no nothing, you know, no. And it was wartime anyway, it was pretty grim. And they had been told that they had to eat plenty of turnips to make up for the fruit.
How
they'd
horrible.
Never seen turnips. Oh dear, dear. Anyway, I remember that there was a very nice Maltese doctor there who kept an eye on them pretty well. But they were nice people all in the blocks, and everybody looked after everybody else, you know. And that was good. But then I didn't see so much of them after a time because. After the Dieppe raid, I went to Abingdon on doing drops to Spain, to France, no France. And then, I went down to Pembroke Dock then to anti-submarine warfare. So we had three squadrons of Sunderlands flown by Aussies. And one American Navy flying Catalinas. And also there were BOAC with the gun turrets taken off doing civilian flights down to Lisbon and Rabat and things. And I did weather. I was doing weather and things.
And so when did they go? But leave London? Did were they sent to Ireland?
No, they never. They stayed there through the whole war.
And do you remember seeing them off? Were you able to say goodbye to them when they left?
No.
You were somewhere else completely.
But I was away.
Mm.
I was away when the time came. But of course I've always kept in touch, very much so, with Frances. And of course as soon as the other girls, they came back from Madeira, and Eva and Pat went to school then in Gibraltar. And Felix, they came back to finish their schooling. And then they all came over here to college. And there were no cheap flights then, so they came over by boat. And they only had one paid-for trip a year. And so they used to come and stay with us, for weeks, months.
Where were you living then with your husband? You were married and living...
Well, I think at first we were living in Northwich in Cheshire, and then we went up to the Middlesbrough area because my husband was with ICI. And they all have come over the years, and as things have improved. In fact, the first time I met Felix's parents was in 1930 when they came over on their honeymoon. And they flew from Paris, and we'd never met anyone who'd flown before. We thought this was terrific. Oh, dear.
Were you able to go... Did you go to art school after the war, then? Is that
yes.
When you went?
Yes. Mm. Yes, I went to the Ruskin School at Oxford. Yes.
Well, I've got a very good friend who went to the Ruskin School.
You?
Yes, she loved it. She absolutely loved it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Claire, I was at school with her actually, and then she went to the Ruskin.
Oh, gosh! Years
what was it
after
like?
Me.
What was it like though? Then was it so? It's straight after the war. Sorry, we're going off the subject a bit, but I just really like to ask you about this.
Well, during the war, the Slade School had been evacuated and joined up with the Ruskin School, and so it all got a bit. So straight after the war, what happened was that the tutors were all shared, and they did half the week at the Slade and half the week at the Ruskin School. And, of course, there was housing problems, as you might say, so we were in the Ashmolean, which was rather nice, because they'd say, oh, go upstairs and look at the Michelangelo or something. You know? It was rather...
So you actually... So that was your... That's where the college was?
Yes.
Yeah. And were you... So you were married by this time?
Well, I was married in 1941. And I saw my husband twice, I think it was. And then he went abroad for 4 years and I never saw him. During which time I had done my 4 years in the Air Force.
So a lot of things had happened
had
in your life.
I'd started at the Ruskin School, and I thought, well, when the war ends, he'd come back, but not a bit of it. By then, he was a major with the Bengal Sappers and Miners, an Indian regiment, and they went right. He went right up through Italy with them. And Monte Cassino and all that, and after them, they were up somewhere near the Po when the war ended, and I thought, oh great, not too far from Italy, but no, he had to take his men back to India, you see, and
when did he finally come home then?
I'd done a term at the Ruskin School when he came back. And I thought, well, now I was in a bit of a dilemma because it was so long and I was so young. I thought, well, I can't go to meet him at the station. I wouldn't know what to look for.
Of course. I mean, yeah. Yeah. How difficult. Like meeting a stranger, then, yes, in a way.
Yes, absolutely.
And also you'd had
we'd
lots...
We'd both grown up, really.
Exactly. Lots and lots of different experiences and
yes,
in right. your short lives, you know. That
yes,
was a major
right.
part of them, wasn't
yeah.
it? Yeah, extraordinary. I don't think people can understand that today when they're in contact with people every moment.
Well, I think... And I didn't get much sympathy at home because my mother was in the same boat with my father away and everything. I mean... And I'd been brought up on that system, really, with a man gone for years and things. So I suppose it was less of a... You know, it was more built into my
were the,
system, wasn't
were it? The students at the Ruskin mostly women, then?
Oh, no, mostly ex-salesmen.
Oh, were they? So who'd always wanted to paint or to do... You know, they had to put their career on
some
hold.
Some people had been there before the war. And some people had got degrees in, you know, in all sorts of things. Some of the people now are RAs and things, of course. But some of them had been to different colleges and got a degree in English or history or something. And then when they came back after the war, thought they had come to the Ruskin School.
And... Just going back now. So after you, so when you did that, did you then start? When did you start painting? Did you sort of start working as a professional artist straight away?
Well, I always painted, and I'd painted since I was in a pram, really. I mean, I didn't just start painting after the war, you know.
You'd always done it.
I had always painted, yes, in you know.
Must have been absolutely wonderful to be at the Ruskin then, was it? Must have been
yes,
an amazing time.
It was an amazing time. But of course it was all... And the Ashmolean now, I went back last year, you know, and it's very grand now.
Mm. And, they've just redone it, haven't they, or
yes,
something?
Yes,
they've
remade it.
Mm. Well, it probably was quite grimy then, wasn't it? I mean, probably
well,
not.
It wasn't grimy so much as much smaller. And, but the... In the hall, they've got all these banquets, you know, whatever you call them, sort of sofa things.
Mm.
They're still there in red velvet. And I remember them so well because, my eldest son was born when I was at the Ruskin.
Oh!
More or less.
Right. So you had to do a bit of reclining then.
Yes,
you were
I
pregnant.
Did.
Yeah. Yes. How amazing. Gosh.
Well, the college, because I knew my husband was going to go back to finish, because he'd only done 2 years of his degree before the war. I knew he was going to go back. So I thought, I'll go to Oxford too. And I went into college to see if they could get him back from India, because he looked as though he was going to be there forever. And the tutors there were very, very good to us, really. And he said, what are you going to do? So I said, oh, I don't, you know. At the time, I didn't have anywhere to live or anything. I just went to Oxford, just like that, got off the train. And I thought, well, I'll go to the YMCA. I'd done that before in various bits of England where I'd been stuck in the Air Force. And I was still in uniform, of course, as I'd just been demobbed. And when I went there, the people at the YMCA said, where do you stay? Well, have you got a bed? So then, I haven't got any money or anything. So they said, would you like to be the night warden? So I said, yes, please. So, so I had a bed and a job, you see. And then when I went to the college, they were really shocked. Oh, that won't do at all, Mrs. Halliburton. What would Major Halliburton say? Tra-la-la, you know what these stuffy old people are like. And and they found me a part of a most gorgeous house, at Old Marston. Really, we had a part of it. And I stayed there till he came back, and then we lived there. Then, while he finished his degree.
And what was he doing? What was his degree?
Natural sciences.
Okay. Mm. Gosh, it's such an interesting story. I suppose we better go back to Gibraltar just quickly. But just tell me when you first went to Gibraltar.
Well, of course, Frances had gone back. And she'd grown up here, really. And then after she'd been there a few years, she must have been old, I don't know. We wondered if she would marry. But she married. Her husband was Jewish, just to complicate matters. She was Roman Catholic, very much so, and she married a man who was one of these Sephardic Jews, yes.
Yes, yes, that's what... There were lots of Sephardic Jews in Gibraltar, weren't there?
Yes.
Yes.
Ah.
Yes.
Called Isaac Ebekasus. And he ran the lottery and the casino until he died, really, which wasn't too long ago, really. And they had two children, Sarah and Leon. Leon teaches in further ed in Gibraltar now, and Sarah's married with children, and Frances has made the top part of her house. It's one of those houses that goes up the hill, back of the hill, you know, into a flat for with, and Sarah and her family now.
Sorry, it's me. It's very bad. I'll just let it ring for a minute. We'll stop in a minute.
Sounds important.
No,
it always phone alarm.
I know, isn't it horrible? Horrible ring.
What is it?
It's my phone, but I'm not going to answer it. So I'm just hoping it'll stop. Should have turned it off. That's lesson one of an oral history interview. Always turn your phone off. What I was just going to say is, when you first went back, because you obviously used to go back and stay with Frances.
No, I can't remember now, but...
What I suppose
I used to go back when Felix's father was alive. He was the registrar to the Supreme Court. And he knew everybody and everything. And he used to take me to see my grandparents' grave in the cemetery down there, and to meet the people in Catlin Bay and things like that. And one day, I don't know whether I told you, I was painting down the back there. There's a lovely little chapel there. It used to be for where they brought the drowned sailors in. Now, that's what it was originally, I think. I was painting there. A man came out of a little shop there, and I'd never set eyes on this man, of course, before. And he came up to me and he said, "I know exactly who you are. My mother was your father's first cousin." I think everybody knows who everybody is in Catlin Bay. And if somebody appears, you know, everybody says, "Now, who's you? So-and-so's uncle's and cousin's daughter, you know." Oh, dear. But that doesn't help the evacuation, does it?
No, but it's interesting just talking about, you know, what I was trying to get at, I think, was what you felt when you first went to Gibraltar, if you felt at all that it was part of you.
Oh, yes. It was so, so like home, really. And of course, Felix's mother and father, I was very fond of them. And of course, they'd all been over here so much. And Felix and his sisters had spent all the holidays. Well, Felix was at Oxford then, and after he'd finished at his schooling, you know, and then he went to eat his dinners, or whatever lawyers do, and he stayed with us. And Eva came over for teacher's training, and Pat. And
So when they all came over, and they'd stay with you or your brother, but not your mother?
Oh, no. No.
Did she never come round?
No.
What, why do you think that
well,
was?
Well, she was very... She was quite friendly with Felix's mother, who I called Auntie Mary, who was a very, very sweet person. And they used to come and stay down to Pembrokeshire.
So they did come, that's good.
Yes,
and that must have been lovely for your father to have them.
Yes, that's right.
But what do you think it was that your mother objected to? Was it just on basis of religion?
I think she was, it's just a very sort of closed country area that she's from, you know. I think it seems more and more absurd as I've got older.
It does seem that. And what she missed as well, because...
What we all missed.
Yes.
But, of course, it wasn't easy to travel down there. And my father was here for those years, and his mother was still alive at that time. And he used to go down to see her. And it used to be quite a performance, because he used to go by train down through France and Spain to get there, you know.
And expensive as well, I'm sure. Do you think it was?
Well, I never heard him complaining about that. But, you know, it was just an awful fag. And, of course, when we went to Gibraltar at first, the frontier was shut. And that was a complication, because you couldn't just go down through Spain and walk in. And there used to be a little boat that came, and there was no fruit in Gibraltar or anything, because there was... The frontier was shut. So our boat used to come out from, I don't know where it came from, Marbella or Malaga or something, and it would be right out in the water, and then a little motorboat used to go out from Gibraltar to get stuff off it. And that was how people used to get in, of course.
Well, that's extraordinary, isn't it? So, yes... You'd have to come round by boat. That would be the only thing you could do. And when was the airport built? In the war, presumably?
Well, the airport was there, and then there was it General Sikorsky who was killed. He went off the thing. But there wasn't much commercial flying, I don't think. But latterly it was, because I remember my father going once. It must have been about 1970. And his mother had not been well, I think, and he went. We persuaded him. By then, the flights were happening. We persuaded him to fly. And we managed to get a berth on a cruise ship back, coming back never again.
So, just ask you a couple of last things, if that's okay. There's so much to say, but I think we've talked for a long time, nearly an hour.
I'm sorry about that. You can wash it all up.
No, I'm certainly not going to do that. It's been really interesting. But I just wanted to ask you about whether your children felt sort of part of Gibraltar as well.
I shouldn't think so at all. They're real Hallibones. No. And my brother... is the same. And I think Eva has mixed feelings now. I was talking to her the other night and she didn't want to know about this. But yet she goes back to stay with Auntie Baby, she's 101, 102, this lady, and she lives in Main Street. And her daughter is Ubi. But she's been brought up in Switzerland. They haven't really... I don't think... They didn't go to Switzerland. They just happened to be in Switzerland. That was different, wasn't it, from being evacuated?
Yes, absolutely.
Yes.
But I was interested in what you said about that you felt that when you went there it was like going home. There must be part of you that is...
Yes. I felt very much that it was... Well, I'm going any of the homes belonging to... my family, and it's like it, you know, but also strange. Although I went with my granddaughter once, I remember, who was, I don't know how old she was then, she must have been about 12, I think, and we were in Francis's. She used to be having supper one Friday evening, because her husband was Jewish, you see, and they had a very good domestic who is Moroccan, because of course you can't get the Spanish girls vanished when the war came, before you had maids from Spain. But and this is a very nice woman called Fatima, but complete with a jalaba, you know, Muslim, and didn't unveil at all. Well, there were men about, very nice, and he was from French, really from being brought up in French Morocco. So the conversation was in Spanish and English and French and Arabic. And my granddaughter's eyes were in store. It was really funny. And Francis had made something delicious for us, you know, like stewed squid and flan or, you know, whatever.
Sort of international, isn't it? It's very interesting that quite a lot of people have said this whole mix of cultures, and because of where it is geographically, is
absolutely fascinating. Really, but the family are basically Italian, of course, not Spanish at all.
Yes.
Because the chap came over from a place called Verasso, I think it is, near Genoa. And in 1850, my great-grandfather, and he married somebody from Catlin Bay on stage. But, and Eva, who now is doubtful about taking part in this, she's a little bit on the grand side, bless her heart. But perhaps I shouldn't be saying that.
Don't worry.
Because her husband was the senior math master at St. Paul's School.
In London?
Yes. So, well, and was at Stowe too. So I don't think that Gibraltar connections are very welcome there entirely. But she goes back, she often goes back to Gibraltar to stay with Auntie Baby, this lady who's so ancient.
Well, I think it's fantastic that you've got this whole really, really interesting part of your life and
well,
your
we
family.
We met this lady, first of all, when my children were really small. My youngest son, now married, grown up, was in a pushchair. And we went to Paris for a few days. And we were walking along the Champs-Élysées, you know, all the traffic. You know how many people are there? And somebody came up to us and, and they were these cousins from Switzerland who we had never actually met. But the Gibraltar family had told them that we were going to be in Paris that week. It's like meeting somebody in Oxford Street, you know. Isn't that extraordinary?
Extraordinary. Totally. Gosh.
Amazing.
Well, I think, I think that you thank you so much. You told us lots of little bits of information about your family. Do you think, I'm going to, is there anything else you would like to
Eva's husband, Bruce, he's the one who knows all about the family.
Right.
And Eva says it's all right, you can get in touch with them. But he's got the family back to Naples in 1750 or something, you know.
Oh, this is fantastic. Is this for us?
Would it be possible for us to contact Francis? Would Francis be happy to talk?
Yes, I think Francis was the one who would really know about the evacuation.
Yes, she would.
And the bombing and how
awful
it was.
This is it, Francis.
And everything. But she has terrible arthritis.
What's her second name? So I'm just going to stop the tape for a minute. Okay, end of interview.